Translation: the Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. He was observed by the child, who thought about who he was. Please repeat. The Lord was thus engaged.
The Lord was thus engaged.
In vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra.
In vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra.
Just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew.
Just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew.
He was observed by the child.
He was observed by the child.
Who thought about who he was.
Who thought about who he was.
So, Prabhu, do you want everybody to mute now?
Well, what's been going on? I've been doing just muted classes and then question and answer at the end.
Yeah.
I kind of feel more comfortable with that just because I can't see anybody. And usually when I give a class live, I do a lot of interaction. But in this format, I just feel like I have to say what I have to say and then invite the questions later.
Okay. All right. So, Prabhu, if you could all mute yourselves, especially those directly on Skype. And I just want to emphasize, I'm going to go ahead and mute everybody on free conferencing. But with free conferencing, at any time, you can unmute yourself by pressing *6. Okay? So, Shreshar, just give me like 1 second here to change over.
Okay.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Ramananda, I'm still hearing somebody talking in the background.
Please, Prabhu, this must be somebody on Skype. I don't know who it is. I can't tell right now. But please, everybody, mute yourselves so don't have to hang up on anybody. Okay, go ahead, Trey.
Okay, there's two verses here. The first verse is no purport, but I found it so rich, just the translation of the verse, and also something in the Sanskrit that I feel compelled to say a few words. And then we'll go right into text 11, which has a nice purport. So text 10, did we do Om Namo? I don't even know if I said Om Namo anyway. I'll say it again, even if I did it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I just remembered I did say that, so I won't say it again. But it never hurts to say it, unlimitedly. So, Astratejas Fagadaya Niharam Ivagopatihi Vidhamantam Sannikarshe Parayakshita Kaityasau. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurud Militam Jeda Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So the first thing that struck me when I read this verse is the word Niharam. Niharam, in this context, Prabhupada renders in the word-for-word translations as drops of dew, but it's also a word in a famous verse in the sixth canto by Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Who said in Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text 15, Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayanaha aghang dhundvanti karts niena niharam, there's the word again, niharam eva bhaskaraha. And in that verse, Shukadeva saying, only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service. And here's where Niharam comes in, because Shukadeva says, Niharam Iva Bhaskara, which means just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. And the context of that verse is that Shukadeva has just told Parikshit all about the universe, and especially ending up with the hellish planets and the hellish punishments, and Parikshit Maharaj being a compassionate devotee of the Lord, even with his own death impending, is thinking about the welfare of others. And he's saying, how can people be freed from this hellish punishments that await? Because people inevitably make mistakes and go down. We go up and down and all around in the material world, but when we go down, we really go down hard. So Parikshit Maharaj is saying, how can people be relieved of all this? So in the verses immediately starting the sixth canto, Shukadev tests Parikshit Maharaj, and he starts giving different remedies, beginning with Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda, how to counteract sinful activity. And in, to the pleasure of Shukadev, Parikshit rejected those initial explanations because it didn't get to the root of the problem, which was the desire to control and enjoy separate from Krishna. And all these remedies don't touch the desire. So Shukadev is very pleased with Parikshit Maharaj. And after Parikshit has rejected the initial explanations, Shukadev famously chants that verse, Kechit Kivalya Bhaktya, which you might ring a bell with you, because Prabhupada would quote this verse a lot. And I think I told this before, but when our godbrother Dayananda Prabhu was walking with Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur some years ago, Dayananda tells this on Yadavar Prabhu's Following Srila Prabhupada Memories DVDs. And Dayananda says they were walking in Mayapur, and as often happens, especially in the winter season, the sun was trying to bust through the clouds, because niharam means fog in this verse. In today's verse, it means drops of dew, but it all has to do with moisture in the air. So on the horizon at Mayapur, when it's clear, you see this clear arun, this reddish, like Udilo Aruna Purababhage, Arunodai Kirtan. It refers to the horizon being tinged with pinkish red. But when it's cloudy, when it's foggy at the horizon, when there's a mist in the air coming off the Ganga, you don't see it. But Dayananda said they were doing a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, you know, around 6 a.m. And this is just the time when the sun is rising and it's trying to, you know, bust through this fog. And so as they were walking, Dayananda said that the sun first started to break through. And then when Prabhupada saw that, he quoted that verse. Ki chit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayanaha aghang dhunvanti karts niena niharam iva bhaskaraha. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. And of course, what made it so dramatic was that Prabhupada was that person who was doing that on behalf of the devotees. He was inviting everyone to take up his and Krishna's teachings, to uproot the weeds of sinful desire, to finally come to a point where we don't backslide, where we get a higher taste, where we've outgrown karma, jnana, and yoga, and where we progress through the stages from Shraddha to Prem. And so the way Dayananda told it was so beautiful. He said the sun was rising, the fog was dispelling, and Prabhupada was just, you know, thrilling us by the way he was quoting the verse and by just because he was living it. He was living the verse, and that made it so, so potent. That's the first thing that struck me about this verse. Just as the sun, it says, evaporates a drop of dew. The same word, niharam, different context. But the context here is that Krishna, this is an extraordinary situation where he's protecting Parikshit Maharaj from the radiation of the nuclear weapon, which is very specific. This specific nuclear weapon has the power to go inside a womb and vanquish a womb. But Lord Krishna is easily dispelling the power of that brahmastra. No sweat, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. Second part of the verse, he was observed by the child. He, Krishna, was observed by the child who thought about who he was. So there's a wonderful echo of this whole thing in a May 20th conversation, just on the eve, or I guess it was afterwards. Yeah, it was in Columbus, Ohio, 1969. Prabhupada is still in Columbus with the devotees before he goes to New Vrindavan for his first visit there. And so actually what Prabhupada's doing is he's singing Jeev Jago. And Prabhupada was recorded a lot in those days, 69-70, singing with a harmonium. And you've probably heard that the recording where Prabhupada's singing Jeev Jago, and then he gives a purport. So Prabhupada says, and it speaks just to this verse here. It says, after Prabhupada sings the song, he says, Jeev Jago, Gora Chanda Bole. Jeev means the living entities. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is asking all living entities to wake up, please, wake up, please, get up. Jago, Jago means wake up. Jeev Jago, Gora Chanda Bole. Kota Nidra, Jayo Maya Pishachira Kole. And then Prabhupada continues. He says, how long shall you go on sleeping on the lap of the witch Maya? Bajiba Bolio Ese Sangsara Bitare. Now, this is what Prabhupada says. In the womb of your mother, you promised that this life you shall engage in the matter of developing your Krishna consciousness. Bulia rohile tumi avidyara bhare. But you are forgotten everything under the spell of illusory energy. And then Prabhupada, he's you know, purporting, or he's freely translating the words, and then he says, actually, when the child remains within the womb of his mother, packed up in an airtight bag, within the womb at the age of 7 months, when he develops his consciousness, he feels very uncomfortable. And the fortunate baby prays to God, quote, please relieve me from this awkward position. I shall fully engage myself in developing my God consciousness or Krishna consciousness in this life. But as soon as the child comes out of the womb of his mother, under the spell of these three modes of material nature, he forgets and he cries. And the parents take care and the whole thing is forgotten. And of course, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a whole song about that. I prayed to you, Krishna, in the womb, and then I came out and I forgot because they were all pampering me and I was the center of attention. And now I'm an old man and I'm coming to you, Bhaktivinoda, in this humility, uttam adhikari humility. He's saying, now I have no shelter but you. So now Prabhupada, he went from that Jeev Jago purport. He brought up this whole instance of Parikshit Maharaj. There is one instance of Parikshit Maharaj, Prabhupada says. When he was in the womb of his mother, their enemy, son of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama, released a weapon called Brahmastra. The Brahmastra could kill even within the womb. So at that time, Lord Krishna entered and saved the child. The child saw the form of Krishna and remembered. When the child came out, he tried to find out the location of that form. He began searching after Krishna. The astrologers who were present there could understand that this child is seeking something. Therefore, his name was given, Parikshit. Parikshit means one who is trying to test. Pariksha. Pariksha means test or examination. So there are many examples. Of course, it is very rare that the child remembers. On a personal note, I didn't have this quite of an extraordinary experience, but when I witnessed the birth of my daughter at Amish midwife's house, November 12, 1990, at 11:32 p.m., she emerged. And this child emerged. They have this saying, hit the ground running. Well, this child came out of the womb doing like a crawl stroke, swimming. She was just like moving her arms, kicking her feet, looking around like a swimmer. It was extraordinary. And then the midwives turned her toward the mother and me, because I was behind my wife, looking. And we were just looking at this amazing emergence. And our daughter was looking at us not like a baby. She was looking at us like, who are you? With this kind of, you know, old soul kind of look. And then after about a minute, she became a baby. But it was a kind of glimpse of what we hear in the Shastras, that, you know, in a fortunate soul, the consciousness manifests in the seventh month. and praying to God. So she was in a different state of consciousness when she emerged. So that was kind of a practical experience of what the Shastra says. So I'd like to go to text 11 where there's a purport, but I just felt compelled to share those things from text 10. Text 11 is a follow-up. Sutta is saying to the sages, while thus being observed by the child, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, and the protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions, and who was unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. Extraordinary. There's Krishna, saving Pariksit in the womb. And the child is in an extraordinary state of consciousness. He's observing and witnessing the Lord in the womb. And he's thinking even, it says in the last text 10, he thought about who he was. And as soon as the Lord had done his business and Pariksit had observed him, he disappeared at once. And now Prabhupada's extraordinary purport. Purport. Child Pariksit was not observing a living being who was limited by time and space. There is a gulf of difference between the Lord and the individual living being. The Lord is mentioned herein as the supreme living being, unlimited by time and space. Every living being is limited by time and space. Even though a living being is qualitatively one with the Lord, quantitatively there is a great difference between the supreme soul and the common individual soul. In the Bhagavad Gita, both the living beings and the supreme being are said to be all-pervading. Yena sarvamidam tatam. Yet there is a difference between these two kinds of all-pervasiveness. The common living being, or soul, can be all-pervading within his own limited body. But the supreme living being is all-pervading in all space and all time. A common living being cannot extend its influence over another common living being by its all-pervasiveness, but the supreme supersoul, the personality of Godhead, is unlimitedly able to exert his influence over all places and all times and over all living beings. And because he is all-pervasive, unlimited by time and space, he can appear even within the womb of the mother of child Pariksit. He is mentioned herein as the protector of the righteous. Anyone who has a surrendered soul unto the Supreme is righteous, and he is specifically protected by the Lord in all circumstances. The Lord is the indirect protector of the unrighteous also, for he rectifies their sins through his external potency. The Lord is mentioned herein as one who is dressed in the 10 directions. This means dressed with garments on 10 sides, up and down. He is present everywhere and can appear and disappear at his will from everywhere and anywhere. His disappearance from the sight of the child Pariksit does not mean that he appeared on the spot from any other place. He was present there. And even after his disappearance, he was there, although invisible to the eyes of the child. This material covering of the effulgent firmament is also something like a womb of the mother nature. And we are all put into the womb by the Lord, the Father of all living beings. He is present everywhere, even in this material womb of Mother Durga. And those who are deserving can see the Lord. Jai. That's such a rich purport. And after catching as much as I could of Irmala Mataji's class, I saw, kept talking about how you can find, you know, so many principles. I think at one point she was saying 200 principles and stuff like this. And that's how Krishna consciousness is, because it's all, as we say, of a piece. Everything relates to everything else. Krishna being the source of everything, the fountainhead, the Godhead, the summum bonum, the ultimate source of all energies, connects with everything. So there's a tendency when we give class or when we share Krishna consciousness to also sort of roam the universe, forgetting perhaps that it's best to focus on one or two points or principles. Why? Because ultimately it's all about what we can learn and grow from. Otherwise, what's the use of just, you know, surveying the universe and surveying so many points if we don't go deep? Okay, so let's take a look, a deeper look, hopefully, at text 11. It was hard to pick out, you know, one principle. One obvious point or principle, however you want to put it, is that there's a gulf of difference between God and us. Much like in Bhagavad Gita 5:15, Krishna says, nor does the Supreme Spirit assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. And in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada really focuses on the difference between the Anu, the tiny, 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 tiny living entity, and the Vibhu, or the great, unlimited, supreme personality of Godhead. So how does this purport today highlight that difference? Prabhupada says here, a common living being or soul can be all-pervading within his own limited body, but the supreme living being is all-pervading in all space and all time. Wow, is that ever dramatic? It's like Prabhupada says, you know, we're aware of what's going on in our body because we're present in the body, and the energy of the soul radiates and pervades the body. But Krishna, he's the soul of everyone and everything. So he's aware of everything, inconceivably, simultaneously, past, present, and future. And that's just inconceivable. So let's take a look at that. I think I've mentioned this before, but when I was in Miami, 1975, February, Prabhupada did highlight the difference between the Lord and the living beings when he spoke on the 13th chapter, Chaitra Gyang Chapi Mang Bidhi Sarva Chaitri Shubharata Chaitra Chaitra Gyor Gyanam Yattaj Gyanam Batang Mama. Krishna says, O scion of Bharat, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. And to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. And then in his ecstasy, Prabhupada just looked up and he said to us, just see by one word, cha, also. Cha means also. Krishna has kicked out Mayavad. Yes. And he's saying this because Krishna is saying there's two knowers in the body. It's not just one. There's a supreme knower and a tiny knower. So that was wonderful how Prabhupada pointed that out. And then what else does Prabhupada highlight here from the verse? What does he draw out? And always remember, the Bhaktivedanta purports are not speculations. They're divine distillations, if you will. Prabhupada, in the intimate wee hours of the morning, Brahma Muhurta, the whole parampara is being distilled through the magnifying glass of his divine graces, realizations. And Prabhupada is drawing out from the verse what we, whose eyes are covered by cataracts, cannot necessarily see. So they're amplifications of what's already there in the verse. So Prabhupada is saying, anyone who is a surrendered soul unto the Supreme is righteous, and he is specifically protected by the Lord in all circumstances. But then Prabhupada turns and he says, the Lord is the indirect protector of the unrighteous also, for he rectifies their sins through his external potency. Very interesting. Immediately I thought of a verse which also makes a similar turn in the 9th chapter of the Gita. Samohang sarvabhuteshu name dveshostina priyaha ye bhajanti tumang bhaktiya mayite teshu chapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but then there's a but, too. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So, however we relate to Krishna, he reciprocates our attitude, our mood. And even if we're bound and determined to forget him, then he mercifully, through his strict disciplinarian, Maya, corrects us. And that's the point here. Prabhupada says, the Lord is the indirect protector of the unrighteous also, for he rectifies their sins through his external potency. There's many meanings to the word maya. Maya, not this, illusion. But another meaning of maya, Prabhupada points out elsewhere, is mercy. It's mercy when we are disciplined by his external energy. It's supposed to prod us, to wake us up into asking why. It's like in the 1960s, it was a famous, I think, a Broadway show and a song to go with it. What's it all about, Alfie? What's it all about, Alfie? Is it just for the moment that we live? What's it all about when we started out? And the whole song is, what's it all about? And that's what human life is for. Unfortunately, unless we have, you know, a potent speaker and a pregnant audience, you know, like Shukadeva and Parikshit, then those questions are short-circuited, and the natural instinct of the human being to ask, you know, why is the sky blue? Is there a God? The natural, you know, consciousness of the child is squelched and stifled and diverted, and everything is wasted like that. So Krishna, he rectifies this within and without, according to our receptivity, our attitude, however we're approaching him. And when we become devotees, and we become aspiring devotees, I should say, then he rectifies us by, as I've pointed out in previous classes, by customizing or tailoring our karma. What we were supposed to experience in one way, we experience in a way that helps us to come closer to him, because we finally, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, received the vision of the goal of life. So he takes our karma and he fashions it in a way that we learn devotional lessons. This is pointed out by Lord Brahma, 554, Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajam. Another highlight in the purport is right at the end, when, let's see, we're not quite there yet. There's another one here. Prabhupada says, oh yeah, okay, this is the second to last point. Prabhupada quotes, the Lord's disappearance from the sight of the child Parikshit does not mean that he appeared on the spot from any other place. He was present there, and even after his disappearance, he was there, although invisible to the eyes of the Lord. So this is a reminder of inconceivable Achintya Bheda Bheda Krishna. And it's an echo of this Brahma Sangita verse. I found another verse from the Brahma Samhita. I forgot to note the number, but famous verse. Ekopyaso rachayatung jagadanda kotim yat chakjarasti jagadanda chayat yadantaha andhantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamadi purusham tamahang bhajami. And Srila Saraswati Thakur in his very high English says, he, referring to the Lord, he is an undifferentiated entity, as there is no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. All the universes exist in him, and he is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universe at one and the same time. Such is the primeval Lord whom I adore. So that's Brahma's ecstasy. He describes something that's inconceivable. How the Lord is the source of everything, and he's also present in his fullness in every, you know, atom and every space in his creation. That's inconceivable. Just like, you know, Mother Jashoda sees, okay, open your mouth, Krishna. See, I'm going to see if you've eaten dirt. And then she sees the whole universe in Krishna's mouth. And then she also sees herself with Krishna on her lap. And that's like, it was so amazing that she immediately lost the Vatsalya Ras and she started to go into own reverence. And Krishna didn't like that. So he immediately covered her over again with Vatsalya Bhav. And Prabhupada says, charmingly, he says, so Jashoda said, all right, just close your mouth. Don't eat dirt. So this is the conclusion of Tattva, that we enter into Rasa, and we just love Krishna. So, you know, after Brahma was foiled in Brahma Vimohana Leela, and he tried to test Krishna, and then Krishna just blew his mind, as we say. So in one of Brahma's prayers, he said, others may say they know something about Krishna, but I don't know anything. And this is the biggest brain in the universe, you know, Chaturmukhi Krishna or Brahma. So he describes something in this Brahma Samhita verse. And then he says at the end, such is the primeval Lord whom I adore. This is the conclusion. Just love him. Krishna is unlimited. He's great. God, we say God is great, Prabhupada says, but just how great he is, oh my gosh, no one even has a clue. In the talk I gave last night for Radhastami, we were talking about, there was a question, because we were focusing on Radha, you know, the feminine aspect of Godhead. So there was a question, it was Raghu. He was saying, there's a lot of people into the goddess these days. You know, goddess worship, and I said, yeah, I even saw a bumper sticker in Berkeley years ago. It said, I spoke with God last night, and boy, was she mad. Only the bumper sticker didn't say mad. It said some obscenity. So this is a natural frustration of the incomplete presentation of God that we've had for centuries in Western religion. You look at Islam, Judaism, Christianity, all you get is the masculine side of Godhead. You get Michelangelo's, you know, imaginative depiction of God on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. You might, if you've ever seen the Sistine Chapel, pictures, you know, little details of his amazing work. You see, for example, God is depicted as an old man with a white beard, and in one place, he's giving the breath of life to Adam, but the way it's depicted by Michelangelo is this very forbidding, you know, almost angry. Well, it does look angry. It looks like Lord Nisringadev. And so he's pointing at Adam, you know, with this divine wrath almost. So this is an incomplete. So we also have wrath, you know, and we have Lord Nisringadev, but the Godhead has many sides, and Radha being Krishna's internal pleasure potency is the feminine side of Godhead. So the exchange of the loving exchanges between Radha and Krishna are unknown to the modern mind. Now Mahaprabhu has come and he's trying to make the whole world aware of this side. So, you know, these speculative and imaginary focuses, foci on goddess, is a symptom of people's frustration with an incomplete one-dimensional presentation of God. So they come out with, you know, kind of feministic goddess worship, or then you have these crazy bumper stickers, you know, I spoke with God last night and boy was she blank, I'll just say angry. So, my gosh, how do we get into that? I'm sorry, this is an example of what Urmul is saying. And then the speaker, he roams all over the place, and you wonder, what was he talking about? And, my gosh. Anyway, in the purport, Prabhupada said, he was present there. He was present there. In other words, Krishna was in the womb. He appeared before Parikshit Maharaj out of his mercy, but he was always there. He's in every atom. And then he disappeared. Why did he disappear? To enhance the rasa, because just like with Narada Muni, he disappeared. Narada Muni had a vision of Krishna, and then he disappeared. And then finally Narada got another auditory message that, yes, I have you will never see me again in this life. This is to increase your hankering for me. So Parikshit is not only a fortunate soul. You know, I mentioned my daughter emerging. And obviously being in an extraordinary state of consciousness when she emerged before she reverted to baby consciousness. But how fortunate Parikshit is, he had a darshan of the Lord in the womb, and so that just made him, you know, so eager to see Krishna. Where is that Krishna? And it brought him, you know, when he was cursed and he was bitten by the snake bird, he was a young man. He was in his 20s, but he was, yes, I want to see my Krishna. So he took the opportunity to hear Bhagavatam. Okay, and then the final point, right at the last sentence of the purport, Prabhupada says, he is present everywhere, even in the material womb of Mother Durga, and those who are deserving can see the Lord. So there's another Brahma Samhita verse referring to Durga, famous verse, Srishti Sthiti, and the translation is, the external potency, Maya, who was of the nature of the shadow of the chit potency, is worshipped by all people as Durga, which literally means difficult going, by the way, Durga. The creating, preserving, and destroying agency of this mundane world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in accordance with whose will Durga conducts herself. I'm hearing a whoop whoop. Whoops. Anyway. Okay. All right. Elsewhere, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his famous song, Tumi Sarveshvareshvara Brajendra Kumara Tomara Ichaya Vishve Srije Karagara Tumi Sarveshvareshvara. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying to the Lord. In one verse, he says, by your will, O youthful prince of Braja, you have created the prison house of this material world. So that's another metaphor, prison house. We hear that a lot. And and Prabhupada is focusing here on the concept of the anda, of the jagad anda, the egg-shaped universe, as being like a womb. We're all inside the womb of material nature. And Guru and Krishna are trying to give us messages, you know, from beyond the veil of illusion. How does Prabhupada refer to it? Yeah, womb. And so Prabhupada says, those who are deserving can see the Lord. So that reminded me of another Brahma Samhita verse. I was just hearing Brahma Samhita in my head when I was reading this purport. Famous verse, which Prabhupada beautifully quotes, 1966 recordings. It's those recordings when Prabhupada was before Prabhupada's stroke. His voice was higher. He had no disciples yet. And he was just speaking at the top of a higher voice with such urgency. You hear him. He's just, you know, catering to every whimsical question and just trying to get people to understand anything. And then you hear him say at one point in one lecture, he's saying, people say, can you show me God? Yes, God can be seen. And then he goes into a very lyrical recitation of 538, the Premanjana verse. Premanjana chudita bhakti vilochanena santaksa daivarudeshu vilokayanti yang shama sundaram achintu gana surupam govindamadi purusham tamahang bhajami. Yes, God could be seen. Only one qualification. Unalloyed love, that's all. So much rasa. So much tattva and rasa in Prabhupada's voice. He is that resident of Vrindavan whom we have to follow. And everything is there, practically just in the sound of Prabhupada's voice. And it was an echo of this. And those who are deserving can see the Lord. Only one qualification, unalloyed love. So this is the... For me, this was the main thing I took away from the verse. You know, we call it a principal point, whatever. That now, you know, we're trying to do an about face here. We're trying to, instead of running away from God and seeing everything as items for my control and enjoying tendency, now we're trying to do an about face, turn toward Krishna, and see Krishna everywhere, see everything as his energy, as paraphernalia to offer to Krishna. And there's so much relief and peace and joy in that. You know, when we stop, we give up the game of trying to exploit and enjoy Krishna's energy and stop being thieves and again be lovers of God. So how fortunate Parikshit Maharaj is to get the darshan of the Lord in the womb. And we are all in the womb here of material nature. But Guru and Krishna are outside the womb. Sometimes I like to give the analogy of the alarm clock. You know, when we're sleeping very soundly and thickly, even we we sometimes incorporate the sound of that, you know, alarm into our dream. But if we're determined to wake up, then we recognize that what Guru and Krishna are telling us is not part of our dream, but they're outside the dream, and they're trying to bring us awake, awake to them. So, let's see. I wrote one note to myself. Conclusion. By practice, we can see Krishna everywhere, like Parikshit Maharaj, and return to him at last. That's the final point. But this purport and these verses are really rich, and they're great examples of what Irma Lamadaji was saying, that we can really, when you look closely, and Prabhupada did want us to do that, he probably used the word scrutinizing. Scrutinizingly study. Study the Shastra threadbare, and you will see new lights of directions, Prabhupada would say. Krishna consciousness, it's like a Vaidurya gem. You can hold it up, and it reflects many lights. You can see it from different lights, different angles. But I just loved how Prabhupada ended the purport, so I chose to focus on that. Those who are deserving can see the Lord. When our eyes are finally tinged with the salve of love, premanjana, and when we give up the cataracts of lust, anger, and greed, then we can enjoy life as Krishna's servants. What does Krishna say in the fourth chapter? Nayam lokosta yagyasya kutonya kurusatama. O descendant of Kuru, without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? So we can be happy in Krishna consciousness, chant and be happy by agreeing to take the medicine, the holy name, and take the diet, Krishna prasadam, and seeing Krishna not in some bush in Vrindavan, as Prabhupada famously put in one purport, fourth canto. Don't try to see Krishna, Prabhupada said, in some bush in Vrindavan. He will reveal himself to you as you surrender your life to the mission of the spiritual master. That's how you see. Then it descends. Krishna is very pleased with that you surrendered your life to someone so dear to him. And that's the way it works. Okay, Ramananda Prabhu, I'm finished speaking. I would like to invite questions, comments from the devotees, and whom I pray will bless me that when I leave in a couple of days, that I can improve the presentation that I was giving on Prabhupada Founder Acharya. So
those on free conferencing, I unmuted everybody. You can mute yourself again by pressing *6. And everybody on Skype directly, you have the sovereign power to do whatever you like. So if there's any comments or questions, please go ahead at this time. Anybody?
Krishna, yes, please. Krishna Sureshwar Prabhu, please accept my humble obeisances. This is Rishabhadev okay. Das.
Oh, Rishabhadev Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you for sharing that story about your daughter. It's very interesting, actually. I haven't heard anything like that before. So that you actually saw that you were almost looking at the face of an old soul. It's quite, paints quite an amazing picture, you know. It's interesting. I have a question, actually. It's to do with, you know, in the spiritual world, we know that there's no time. Or time is conspicuous by its absence, they say, and space as well. So, and we know Krishna is all pervading, but the liberated souls in the spiritual world, how are they bound? How are they not bound by space? And how does it actually work? Okay. If you understand what I mean.
Okay, let me see if I can understand. You said there's no time or space in the spiritual world. When you said that, I was thinking, well, there's no material time or space, but there's certainly spiritual time and space, because, for example, in his purport to Gita 2:16, let me see if I can pull that up. I'll just try to remember it. Prabhupada talks about. Let me see if I can get it real quick. He talks about an inferior natural sequence. Hang on. Let me just get the Gita here. I mentioned this in a previous class, in a Gita class. There's superior sequences and inferior sequences. So, okay, 216 purport. Whoops. Okay. Here we go. Where is it? Oh, here we go. In the Vedanta Sutra, as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada writes, the Supreme has been accepted as the origin of all emanations. Such emanations are experienced by superior and inferior natural sequences. The living entities belong to the superior nature, as it will be revealed in the seventh chapter. Now, Prabhupada just goes on. He doesn't elaborate there, but the inferior natural sequence is what we experience in the material world, and scientists call it entropy. Things go from a state of wholeness to a state of dispersion all the time. You know, our bodies, our minds, relationships, you know, New Year's resolutions, everything starts out, you know, integral, and then somehow, sakale neha mahata, in due course of time, everything becomes lost. And that's the way it is in the material world. And that, again, is another reminder to us. It's a prod. It's purposeful. It's done that way to make us ask why. Why? You know, we're in the human form of life, we're supposed to be philosophical creatures. We are, by nature. But the modern world discourages the why question, and they just talk about what. You know, what's going on and how to control and enjoy. Okay, the superior sequence is that things happen, but instead of getting worse, they get better and better and better and better, and all speech is song, and every step is a dance, and the flute is the favorite attendant, and it's ever increasing. And Rupa Goswami says in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, for example, that there's an eternal competition between Krishna's potency and his awareness of that potency. As soon as Krishna apprehends his own potency, it increases inconceivably. So that's the superior sequence. Everything getting better and better and better and better and better. And we have no experience of that in the material world. It sounds like fairy tales, you know, pie in the sky. But if you look at yourself, if we're honest, we see that's actually what we want. We don't want the pleasure of the ice cream cone to go away, which it always does. You know, as we become filled up, as we eat, the hunger goes away. And, you know, that very meal that we were eager to eat in the beginning when we were hungry, when we're full, if somebody offers us more, then we say, no, I've had enough. And if people force it on us, we get sick. So everything's like that in the material world. There's a law of diminishing returns. Whereas in the spiritual world, everything gets better and better and better and better and better. Now, if you want a more, you know, scientific answer in terms of time and space, I'm not your guy. I just know how it works in terms of, you know, the mood like that, and kind of generally. But you might have to talk to some spiritual scientist for a more, analytical answer.
Yeah, I think I would want a less scientific answer, actually. I'm not scientifically inclined.
Yeah,
but, you know, like time, right? Like time, like here, there's time because let me take a spiritual world. There's no time because there's no past and future. There's only present.
So but there's time, sequence. But there's sequence. You just say there's no time. It's almost like you got to remember the paradoxes of the Isopanishad. You know, tadejati tanayjati. The Supreme Lord walks and he does not walk. There's no material time, but there's certainly space that things happen in, and there's certainly sequence. There's a spiritual time, but there's no unfortunate inferior material time and space. That's all. I always want to just say that immediately when you say there's no time, because there is time. It's like saying the Lord has no form or no qualities, right? That's true. He's nirguna, he's nirarupa or whatever it is, but he's got an unlimited spiritual form and he's got unlimited spiritual qualities. So why, for example, do people like to dance? And why do we like to sing? Because that's a little reminder, a little hint of where we've come from. where all speech is song, all every step is a dance. And there's drama here, but those dramas are always tragedies in the end. Where in the spiritual world, there's drama, but it's full of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. So we want to re-enter that atmosphere that's compatible with our desires. And that's only possible by remembering and acting on the tattva, the truth, that we're all eternal servants of Krishna. So,
is that all right? Thank
you very much.
Okay. Yes. Sure,
thank you.
Yes.
I have a bit of a complicated question. I don't know if you'll be able to understand what I'm talking about, but I'll try.
Okay.
I recently came in contact with the Screwtape Letters, you know, C.S. Lewis.
Yeah, C.S. Lewis.
Have you read those?
No, but I've been recommended to read those many times. So this is another case. So maybe I should read those.
Okay. Well, then maybe what I'm going to say is not going to make that much sense. But I'll try and relate how he puts it, because, of course, you know, how he writes is very nice. But
right.
He also, in his own, his Christian model, he was saying that, and taking the part of the devil, he's saying that if you want to capture souls, and you got to make sure that you're careful to exploit their weaknesses. But and usually, when souls are weak, is when they're in the depths of depression or something like that. And he, it's related to as peaks and valleys. Mm-hmm. But if one is a sincere soul, then even when he's in the depths of, you know, the worst situation, he'll always remember God. You know, because we're reading in this, in the verse in the purport, Krishna's everywhere. He never disappears. You know, he's just maybe gone from our vision, but he actually is everywhere. It's just a matter of the devotee, how he's going to be able to perceive the Lord, and the Lord will reveal himself. There was another thing related to that, that he said, again, I don't know if you're going to be able to understand this because if you haven't read it, but he was saying in another sense that when you look at the different phases of time, past, present, and future, if one looks into the future, then that's where he to think about longings and desires. He'll put off surrender to his God's will, and he calls it the core of temporality, whereas the past is frozen, but the present, that touches the eternality.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see some Vedic Siddhanta in that, or is that just too nebulous?
No, that's very compatible with what's the name of the poem? Saragrahi Vaishnav. Saragrahi Vaishnav is this long 20-odd stanza poem Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote in 1871 while he was a magistrate, or before he was a magistrate. He was living at Puri, and it begins famously, "Alas for those who spend their days in festive mirth and joy, the dazzling deadly liquid forms their hearts for air employ." Famous verse. Bhaktivinoda took this meter, popular ballad meter, of British and American poets at the time, and he did it better than them. And then one line, famous line, or one verse, one stanza, the Thakur says, "Forget the past that sleeps, and ne'er the future dream at all, but act in times that are with thee, and progress ye shall call."
Oh, that's nice.
Yes, and I'll tell you a personal anecdote I already told about the birth of my daughter. When my former father-in-law, passed away, my wife and I, former wife and I, were in South India, and we couldn't get out of the country fast enough to attend the funeral back in New Jersey. What we did, we dictated that stanza to my former wife's sister, and my former father-in-law was buried with that stanza in the breast pocket of his coat.
Wow.
Forget the past that sleeps, and there the future dream at all, but act in times that are with thee, and progress ye shall call. It was our way of wishing the soul of the body known as Joseph Ward, that was the name of my former wife's father, because we couldn't attend the funeral, we wanted to wish him well, so we did that. So her sister took down the stanza, put it on a card, and that card was placed in the pocket of Mr. Ward when he was put in the earth in New Jersey. Now, this is right on the point, because a self-realized soul is Brahmabhuta, Prasannatma, Nishochati. Shochati means he doesn't lament. That's the past thing. We're all, you know, thinking about what we've lost. And Kangshati, we don't hanker for what we don't have. You know, that this is the tendency of the material mind. We're always at the movies. We're dreaming or lamenting about what we lost. You know, we're replaying the past, and we're playing the movie of the future. Kangshati. We're hankering after what we don't have and scheming and making plans of how we can get it, forgetting the whole time that life is not about what you have and don't have. It's about how you are. It's about how we are. And the more materialistic a culture gets, the more it forgets that. And that's why America is perhaps the most unhappy place on the planet, because it's all about trying to acquire things, and people don't have a life inside. So I see C.S. Lewis's, you know, comments about, you know, yes, playing the movie of the future, especially, you know, hankering about what we don't have, and chasing that eternal carrot of Maya, the illusory energy. You know, that fish play we used to do in ISKCON, maybe they still do it. You know, the big fish and the little fish, and the big fish is the super soul, and the little fish is the supreme soul, and the little fish decides he wants to be the big fish, so immediately he's flopped onto land, which is similar to, you know, Maya casting us out of this, or Krishna's potency is casting us out of the spiritual world into the material world. And no matter what we do, we can't be satisfied. So we have to give that up. Yeah, we have to give up the hankering and the lamenting. Live in the present. Prabhupada was the personification of Krishna conscious, be here now. He was fully present with whoever he was, wherever he was. He was right there. He was out of this world in his consciousness, but he was very down to earth. And this is what, you know, struck people about him, that he was obviously living in an exalted consciousness. He was obviously very close to God, very confidential relationship with God. But he was right there with you because he was seeing Krishna there in the present. He was seeing Krishna everywhere. It wasn't simply some, you know, pie in the sky when you die thing, but it was Krishna. He was seeing Krishna everywhere right at the moment. So that's a symptom of a truly God conscious person, and that's probably why people encourage me to read C.S. Lewis, because they see in him somebody who has intimations of deep God consciousness. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. It wasn't vague at all. It was actually right on the point of how we all have to be here now with Krishna. Yo mang pashati sarvatra saramang chamai pashati tasyahang napranashyami sachame napranashyati. Gita 6:30. This is the yoga system. This is real yoga. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost in me. That's real God consciousness. Thank you, Ramananda Ji.
Suresh, you have to go?
That's a loaded question. Yeah, I got a lot to do here, but
I'll make this really quick. I really liked your class, and you know, I got a lot from it. I wanted to add something to the goddess thing. Kind of an interesting issue. And since we just observed Srimati Radharani's appearance day, of course, we all know the famous goddesses like the goddess of fortune, the goddess of learning, the goddess who rules this material world. And we all know their names, but we also know that all the goddesses flow from the original goddess, Srimati Radhika. Something like the unlimited Vishnu Tattva forms flow from Krishna. But the interesting point that was expressed yesterday, and something that the uninitiated non-devotees don't know anything about, is that Srimati Radharani is the only agency by which we can know or realize Krishna. She alone has the capacity to reveal Krishna to the fallen conditioned souls. And that capacity is her investment in all living beings, which appears in the heart as faith or Shraddha. Thus, one of her names is Shraddha Devi. She's also the personification of Krishna's compassion. So we're advised to pray to her to get the mercy of Krishna. Right. So the Haladini potency, the female potency of Godhead, is how God reveals himself. And what a dignified and charming role, eminent aspect of Godhead.
Yeah, we were talking a little about this last night, how when you see Srimati Radharani on an altar, for example, she has her hand up, and it's like a double meaning. It's mercy, you know, that yes, it's like a welcome, that this is, you've come to Krishna, but it's also, be careful. This is my Krishna you're dealing with. Yeah, you know? Mercy, it's Radha, yes. And we say, Hare Krishna. Prabhupada makes this point over and over again. We can't even utter Krishna. We have to utter Radha first. And her name is mostly, that's what the mantra, Maha Mantra consists of. It's mostly Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So you're absolutely on point there. To approach Krishna, we have to situate ourselves in the internal potency, which is personified by Srimati Radharani. She rules. So, our Lokanath Swami sometimes tells a story that he was in Vrindavan preaching, and then some Brijbasi approached him and said, "What are you talking about Krishna for all the time? Who is this Krishna? It's Radha." He was just focusing on Radha. He was laughing how the Brijbasis are so Radha focused.
Right.
That, you know, they know that's where it all, you know, begins and ends with Radharani. Because and when I was giving the class last night, I was focusing on a talk Prabhupada gave in Montreal in 1968, and he was introducing Radharani to people who never even heard of Radharani, and Prabhupada was saying, everyone is trying to know God. But just try to understand how great Radharani is, because Krishna, God, he's trying to know Radha.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to love Radha. He's mad after Radha. So that's how he was introducing Radharani, that God is great, but Radharani, in a sense, is greater than God because she conquers God by her devotion. She's the queen of bhakti, the queen of devotion. So... yeah, that's a great reminder in the wake of Radhashtami. It's all about Radharani, the personification of Krishna's internal pleasure potency. Thank you very much.
Right. You know, Shareshwar Prabhu for giving these classes, and especially for the long series of seminars that you've given. We'll really miss you, and we hope that you return safely and quickly.
Thank you, Ramananda Prabhu. Please pray that I can actually develop this into a seminar because, you know, I keep saying we're just in the trenches here, blah, 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 over and over again. But, yeah, this the real work starts now. You know, when all these statements I was making, they have to be introduced as suggestions, and through the exercises I have to create for the seminar, the students have to discover these things for themselves. That's the most powerful learning. It's student-centered learning, where the students, under the guidance of the facilitator, discovers these truths experientially for themselves. So this is where the real work begins. I'm going to be still in workshop mode in New York City and Philly, but I will have a live audience. And, you know, thank the Lord, I was able to at least do... what I did with you folks, so I have an idea of the challenges I'm up against to really make this a seminar. I don't know when I'm returning. I'm all about one-way segments all the way to Mayapur. You know, it's Honolulu to Newark, and then New York City by shuttle, and then it's down to Philly by Amtrak, and then it's, you know, airplane to Ireland. then its airplane to Radadesh in Belgium, then its airplane to Calcutta and Mayapur. And beyond that, there's no return ticket because I don't know what's going to happen with this seminar. I'm hoping Krishna will let me develop it enough that I'll be invited other places, you know, Australia, maybe England, Africa, who knows, Russia. There's so many places. I have a hunch people are you know, if it's done right, they want this. They're thirsting for it. So we'll see. But I hope I can come back maybe April, 7 months from now. If it's a flop, then I'll be back in March, right after Gaur Purnim. You know, I'll just come back with my tail between my legs. But I have a hunch that Krishna wants more from me, and he wants me to share. This is just the beginning of sharing it, so we'll see. But thank you, Prabhu.
Best wishes to you, Prabhu.
Yeah, best.
Jai, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry. The blessings of the Vaishnav, that's all we, that's how we live. We live on blessings. So.
Well, on that note, Vanchakal Patrubya Sravya
Kripachak, 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 Patitanam, Pavanebio, Vaishnavio, Namo Namaha.
Jai Prabhu,
Jai.
Jai. Thank you so much.
Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.